Sorry, I forgot to start recording.
worries. Non-voting members, Jonathan and Rocio.
Oh yeah, Rocio is no longer the ADOT rep, but we have not had no one else has filled her spot just yet. FYI.
And I'm Greg Punsky. I am replacing Jonathan for the Pima County Department of Transportation.
Oh, okay. Welcome, Greg.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'm excited to be with you.
Okay. So, it looks like we're all here and there's a quorum. So, co-chairs, would you like to call the meeting to order?
I call to order the September meeting of the Complete Streets Coordinating Council meeting.
And I second the motion.
Very good. Zoom reminders that everybody's on mute unless you're speaking. Use your raise hand function. And we always call on members first. Observers would be only if time permitting. In terms of any kind of comments or questions that are outside of the call to the audience. And members, if you can please participate with your camera on as much as possible. And others, feel free to turn your cameras on as well. So now in terms of approving meeting notes, we've got both the June meeting and the project review subcommittee meeting. So first
Oh,
question,
sorry,
sorry.
that was an error on the agenda
I
that
was
sent
wondering.
out. But the agenda that was posted on by the clerk's office is correct. So that would be approval of the last two meeting,
July, right?
July,
July and
yes,
August.
August meeting. Yeah. So sorry about for not catching that.
No worries. My fault.
So is it just August meeting or is it July and August?
July and August.
Okay. So any corrections or edits for the July meeting? Notes. Any corrections or edits to the August meeting notes? Okay, that means that there is consensus approval to approve those two notes. So now we'll turn it to the co-chairs to motion for approval. You want to start this time, Sophia?
Sure. I move to approve the meeting notes from the last two meetings.
I moved to second.
Great. Agenda review, Ryan.
Thank you. So we have a pretty full agenda tonight. First up, I'll be giving an update on Country Club, which I presented on at I believe in the July meeting. Give an update on where things are at with that and present a funding request for improvements there. Ben Elias, one of my colleagues, is going to be giving an update on the Major Streets and Routes Plan update. Patrick will be giving a financial update on Prop 411. Andrea Altamirano will be giving an update on neighborhood mini grants and giving a little introduction to herself. And then we have a discussion about there's been discussion of having an item on public transit at a future meeting, and we're hoping to kind of hone that and sort of figure out what we want the thrust of that to be. So we'll have a discussion there. And then we'll try to leave some room for the Complete Streets experiential opportunity at the end.
Okay, excellent. So before we launch in, let's give Greg and Roger a chance to just introduce yourselves to the committee. Starting with Roger.
Okay, I'm not sure what you need. I'm Ward 6 representative. I live in Midtown, east of Randolph Park and in the San Gabriel neighborhood. I've been living in Tucson since 1978, off and on. I was gone for a few years, but I moved back. I've been a cyclist and a walker most of my life. I commuted to work on a bicycle for several decades. back starting in the 80s. And I worked as a council aide for Nina Trasoff for 4 years, 2005 to 2009 during her term. And so I became involved in connectivity and all the things that go with, multimodal transportation in the city. And that's basically my interest there. And so when I saw an opportunity to help again, Severin, who works for the Cyclovia thing, recommended I apply to Karen to be the representative, and that's how I got here.
Great. Well, welcome, Roger. Thank
you. Okay, I'm retired, so 75 years old, still riding a bicycle. You know, I bought an e-bike recently, so pretty active still.
Great.
That's about it.
Well, thanks for joining the committee, or the council, rather. Greg.
Hello, everybody. I'm Greg Punsky. I'm a native of Tucson, and I just joined Pima County Department of Transportation in May of this year. For 34 years, I was a transportation engineer with the Federal Highway Administration. I worked in states across the country between Washington State, D.C., North Carolina, Utah, Texas. My last assignment was a technical director for the hydraulic and geotech team. I've had a strong interest in highway safety, pedestrian safety, and bicycle safety. And so as Jonathan was needing to move forward or wanted to pursue additional different interests, I volunteered to to replace him on the committee. And I'm excited to be with you. And this is something that I think it'll be a lot of fun. So Tucson's my home. I moved back about 2 years ago. I'm a graduate of the University of Arizona as well as South Point High School. So glad to be with y'all.
Great. Nice to have you. And here is your your counterpart. I think Jonathan's just joining. Okay, so we're going to move on. Anybody in the observer category that's going to want to speak in the call to the audience?
Yes, I would. Chris Lopez.
Okay, anyone else? All right, so let me just read the instructions, Chris, and then we'll let you speak. The call to the audience may not result in discussion with members of the CSCC. No legal action may take place during the call to the audience, and speakers may not be disruptive. Members may only respond to criticism. Members of the audience may still participate in agendized items as per the bylaws of the CSCC, and as I mentioned before, we'll be taking preference to members first in the time permitted for each item. And committee members may request that the item be considered by the co-chairs for a future agenda. So, And it's 3 minutes per speaker. So go ahead, Chris.
Okay. Well, I am Chris Lopez. I'm with Julia King Neighborhood Association. Okay. I want to thank very much Ryan and Patrick for meeting with us to hear our concerns regarding Country Club between Aviation and 22nd Street. They did advocate for us on making some minor improvements now, like maybe in the near future, and then of course wait for the big major improvements after the 22nd Street Bridge has been completed. So we really appreciate the time that you gave to us and recognize that, you know, this is a big issue that has been going on for a long period of time. For over 20 years, we've been trying to get this area fixed, of course, you know, with the sidewalks, the curbs, the drainage, the lighting, and so forth. And I just wanted to show appreciation for Ryan and Patrick for meeting with us, and hope to see that there's more improvements as we go along. So I'm not able to say for the whole meeting, but I did want to show my appreciation. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Chris. That's nice. Okay, so we're going to continue on then. The Country Club update and funding request is our first agenda item. Ryan will lead that. The purpose is a decision item with approval for funding to design an and implement a path. So Ryan, go ahead.
Thanks, Tani. Let me just share my screen. All right. So basically, this is kind of an update on an item that I presented on at a previous meeting about Country Club Road between 22nd Street and Barraza Aviation Parkway. So basically, this is a street that was part of a Move Tucson project that was identified to add continuous accessible pedestrian facilities, lighting, enhanced bike lanes, safe crossings. The project description refers to a longer stretch of Country Club, but you know, all of the applicable items are ones that we would want to do as part of a modernization project. And you know, we have received requests. Most recently from Julia Keenan Barrio Centro, including Chris Lopez, who you heard from a few minutes ago, you know, requesting that we modernize the road and make improvements. We've heard concerns about an expected, you know, anticipated increase in detour traffic once the 22nd Street Bridge is closed for the construction of the new bridge. As Chris mentioned, Patrick and I met with folks from both of those neighborhoods to listen to their concerns, to discuss sort of what you know, what can be done at this time, given that a full modernization, currently there's not funding available to do something like that. Our best cost estimate was about $9 million to do that. It's also not something that we could realistically do during the timeframe of the bridge construction. So with that in mind, we discussed, you know, some other potential improvements that could be done in the interim. And our goal is really improving safety for everybody, improving walkability and accessibility, and also improving the bike facilities that are on Country Club. We've worked with our traffic engineering division. Hal Feldman is here in case anyone has any questions about it. But what we're looking at right now, before the end of 2024, we have some short-term improvements that we're looking to get implemented. One would be adding a night speed limit of 30 miles an hour to the corridor, given the lack of lighting. We're planning to add additional speed limit signs around Midway on this stretch of road, as well as two radar speed feedback signs. We're also planning to add additional striping to add buffer lines to space the vehicle lanes from the shoulders or bike lanes a little wider, and to narrow those vehicle lanes to slow car traffic. Those will also have what are called RPMs, reflective pavement markers, that'll be added in the buffers. If you've ever driven over those, you can feel those, that you get like a ba-dump, ba-dump, ba-dump. They're also reflective, so it'll add both visual and tactile, you know, feedback that's not a place that you should be driving or crossing typically. And where we can, we're also planning to add some flex posts. We've heard some concerns about unsafe passing on the right in the shoulder area, and other behaviors that these improvements are expected to, you know, are expected to improve. And we'll also be refreshing the reflective pavement markers on the center line as well. And funding for this will come from previously approved funding in the Street Safety Improvement Plan for small-scale, low-cost safety improvements. And we'll report back on that, on the costs and the improvements that were made after that, just in accordance with, you know, the process that that we approved for that. Before I move on, actually, does anyone have any questions about any of this? Because I'm about to get into the funding request.
Do the radar? Oh, I should raise my hand. But the radar speed feedback signs, do those actually end up slowing down speeds? Do you have studies, or has that been studied?
Yeah, Hal, do you have? Can you field this one?
I I don't have any recent data about the performance of those signs long term. Anecdotally, I know that they have an effect short term, but I don't have hard numbers on long term effects of the radar feedback signs.
Anything. Thank you.
Sophia?
Yeah, I really like the new reflective pavement markers, the buffer lines added to shoulders with that tactile feedback. I have a similar question to Marshall, which is, do those feedback signs actually work? It feels like they might be 50-50. Same thing with the speed limit of 30 miles per hour. On 12th, no, it's on 10th Ave. When you're driving down that 25 mile an hour road, people are actually going 50, and it's a road that feels like you can go 50 on. And so I'm curious if there's other, like low cost traffic calming that could help instead of spending the money on something that might not work.
I'll start with that. The striping improvements, the flex posts and the RPMs, those are kind of the things that'll change the nature of the roadway that we're expecting will narrow it and calm traffic. There's a concept called side friction where when you have when you have any kind of vertical elements, whether they're posts, whether they're trees, closer to the roadway, that causes people to perceive the road as themselves as moving faster and slow down. That's sort of intended to go in concert with the night speed limit reduction. As far as other traffic calming improvements that we could make on a road like this, I don't know of any that we could implement, given that it is a collector street, partly because of the bridge closure, it is going to need to continue to carry a significant amount of traffic. Due to drainage issues, things traffic calming like speed tables are not on the table for this street at this time. Hal, I don't know if you have anything to add to that or if I covered it.
No, I think you covered it. I think it's especially with the west side of Country Club with no curb and gutter and that and all the driveways there feeding those residential properties. I just off the top of my mind, I difficulty in trying to come up with something that we could use in the street and not impact all the access points to that those residents on the west side.
Marshall? You're on
Yeah,
mute.
sorry. I just had one more question. Will I know when they start the bridge work that they'll have like an official bypass. Will Country Club be part of the official bypass that the city chooses to redirect traffic?
I believe that it is not. That there's a map of that available on the 22nd Street Bridge project website.
Okay.
But as much as we can encourage people to use certain detour routes, there's only so much we can do
Yeah.
when roads remain open.
Yeah, no, I understand. I just wasn't sure if that was okay. Thank you.
Sophia?
Hi, this is Jennifer. I'm sorry.
Oh,
Let's you know.
let's go to Jennifer and then back to Sophia.
I'm
Go
sorry,
ahead.
I can't raise my hand because I'm driving, but I wanted to answer that question. I went to the 22nd Street Bridge presentation, and they said they're not going to advertise it as a detour route, but like he said, people are still going to use it, the people that always use it. But I do want to comment that I think because when I do use that area, it is very wide, and if it's narrowed down, people will slow down. That's what I'm feeling that in a sense. So that's all I wanted to say. Bye.
Thanks, Jennifer. Sophia?
I wanted to ask if Mountain was a collector street because I feel like that's kind of there's some similarities there. In terms of having a speed table.
Yes, Mountain is a collector street. So yeah, I mean, it's not It's not common, but we do have some collector streets that do have traffic calming in the form of speed tables. Those are considered on a case by case basis, and if there's potential for them to impact drainage adversely, then we can't do them.
Zach, you're on mute.
Disappeared for a second. I was just curious, like, why the reduction in nighttime speed limit to 30 and not just a reduction in general? You know, kind of what the basis of that was.
Yeah, Hal, can you answer that?
Sure. So what we do is for regular speed limits, we use a FHWA software that's called US Limits 2, and it takes into the existing speed on the street, the length of the street, the amount of traffic on the street, whether it's a one-way street, the number of through lanes, what the area type is. We put all that data in, and we typically follow what that recommendation is for that federal highway software. And when we evaluated this section of Country Club between 22nd and Aviation, it came back as what the post is currently, which is 35. The night speed evaluation, what we do is we look at citywide all the accidents that happen in the city of Tucson. And we come up with a, from the data, we come up with the number of accidents that happen in the day and the number of accidents that happen at not day. And sorry for the terminology, that's how it's reported, is day and not day. But then we look at that number, so whatever the percentage is for the not day for the entire city, and then we look at for this corridor in particular, Country Club from 22nd to Aviation, we look at those same two numbers. So in this case, on that section of Country Club, the not day crash history is higher than the citywide not day crash rate. So that told us that there's more crashes happening on Country Club at night than typically citywide. That's why we made the decision to lower the speed limit, the nighttime speed limit on Country Club.
Thank you.
Do you want to continue? You have more slides, right, Ryan, or is this it?
And I just want to issue a small correction, which Patrick alerted me to. Country Club is actually technically an arterial street in our major streets and routes plan. Not all of the designations of streets that are local collector or arterial necessarily sort of line up with perception or line up with how the streets, you know, function and feel today. Our newer street typology that came out of Tucson is sort of more realistic thing, and that calls Country Club an urban connector, which is sort of an equivalent to a collector. And this might be a little bit of a lead into Ben's presentation about the major streets and routes plan coming up next. But just wanted to clarify that and correct myself. So in addition to those improvements, which you know, the wheels are kind of turning on those already. We're proposing to address the lack of pedestrian facilities on this stretch of road with an asphalt path that would be located on the west side of the street, where there's currently more room and not as significant drainage issues as there are on the east side of the street. This is not expected to be, you know, a super long-term solution. And ultimately, you know, this is a road that we would want to fully modernize. But given the variety of constraints and time before we could actually realistically make, you know, larger scale improvements to this road, this seemed like a reasonable sort of medium term solution that that we could implement that would address some of the issues about pedestrian safety and accessibility on the stretch of road. So this would be, and I want to lead by saying, you know, we haven't fully evaluated the feasibility of this. That's something we would start with. But what we're proposing is a 6-foot asphalt path. It would be very similar to a path that was constructed on Columbus Boulevard between Timrod and 22nd Street. You can see a street view image of that there. It's a very similar context in terms of, you know, there's residential with driveways facing, you know, onto the street like that. And it's kind of very similar in a lot of ways to the stretch of Country Club. So it seems like it could work well on this stretch of road, similar to the way that works on Columbus. Our back of the napkin cost estimate came in a little under $400,000, but to be on the safe side, considering that there are a number of unknowns that we will need to get into, we're anticipating and requesting $500,000 for this work. And just to give some context, this would connect to sidewalks and shared use path on either end of Country Club. It would not fully modernize and put full proper sidewalks on the west side of Country Club. I want to make that clear. We've got some parking lots that just we can't address in the scope of a project like this. They are paved. They are, you know, paved and stable surfaces. But those are shown in sort of the gray color that you can see. Here, black is represents actual either sidewalk or shared use path in the area. And just to give context in terms of equity, this project area is near but not directly adjacent to the two highest equity focus areas that that we look at when considering projects like this. The safety performance on the stretch of road, according to analysis and PAG Safety Explorer, is poor. There were a total of 94 total reported crashes over 5 years between 2018 and 2022. You can see the hotspots are really at the intersections with 22nd Street and Aviation, which is typical for major streets. But there were 6 severe crashes, including 2 pedestrian crashes reported in the project area, and one of them occurred at 23rd Street. The others occurred at the signalized intersections. And the impact to the street safety improvement plan is we have about $627,000 in the 7-year budget. To recall, we committed 7 years out of the total 10 years with the projects that were approved back in August. With the understanding that, you know, it in about 2 years, we'll reevaluate. We'll see how sales tax collections are coming in, what projects are costing. And based on that and sort of being closer to the end of the 10-year program, we'll look at authorizing funding for additional years. But right now we've got $627,000. We're looking at this project costing about $500,000, hopefully less, but it would leave about $127,000 in the end in that category. So that's my presentation. I'm happy to open it up for questions.
Zach.
Well, like a couple questions. This may be a somewhat, I don't know, dumb question, but with the parking lots that kind of cross over this route, when users would be walking the path or rolling the path, as the case may be, and then having to cross into parking lots and then cross back or go back onto the path, would curb cuts be added to so they could do that safely?
Yes. So we wouldn't be constructing a sidewalk through those parking lots, but we would be providing curb cuts for those transitions. through there to make those more accessible.
Sophia and Ariel.
Oh, were you finished asking your question?
Were you finished, Zach? Okay.
Are we just looking to approve the asphalt path for 500K? Okay. Yes.
Ariel?
I was curious about whether this would impact any budget that we had allocated previously to the kind of pilot of, you know, pre-approving or not requiring full CSCC review and approval of the smaller dollar amount projects, as well as whether it would affect any funding that might be available for what we're going to hear about later, the neighborhood mini grants.
Good question. So the neighborhood mini grants are a separate separate pot of money. They're a separate carve out in the safety category. And the I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry. What was the other part of your question? Long day.
The small dollar, the lower, yes. The smaller projects.
Thank you. Yeah. So we, you know, we do have that $200,000 a year in small dollar projects that is budgeted. And you know, we're already more than 2 years into the program, so you know, we've got some capacity in there. So that gives us some breathing room for those kinds of projects.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I got a question in the chat. Mike, do you mind if I read that question out loud?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so yeah, the question was if there's leftover monies like in the cycle, like the 127,000 that I showed, can it roll over to the next cycle, or does it have to be used in this cycle? No, so this, you know, this all of this funding is you know, ultimately for the full 10 years of Prop 411. It doesn't go away if we don't use it. Right now, you know, we're trying to keep within that sort of 7-year time horizon so that, you know, we aren't overcommitting, and we can kind of keep on top of the projects that we've authorized. And then as we move along over the next several years, we'll be able to have a better handle on sort of what things are costing, how much money is coming in, and what additional projects we can include within the total 10-year capacity of the Prop 411 safety.
Thank you.
And your other question. That's a little. I think Patrick is going to address it in the next item. So
let's not put questions in chat. Just raise your hand if you have a question. We're not supposed to be using chat. So Marshall.
Yeah, I just had a question. I think I've asked it before, but the asphalt walkway on Country Club, does that seem to be holding up really well and will work really well as a solution for what we want?
Yeah, so that was installed, I forget if it was 2017 or 2018, but it's been in place for at least 6 years, and it does seem to be holding up well. You know, it had a decorative finish. It's like textured and colored asphalt, and in some places you can see that it's worn. But as far as the condition of the path, it seems to be holding up well. So, you know, we would be constructing the path on the Country Club to the same standard. So, yeah, I mean, even though it's not intended to be a permanent solution on the road, you know, we would be constructing it to the same standards as you know, any permanent improvement in terms of construction quality.
Thank you.
Okay, so the proposed decision is to authorize $500,000 to design and implement this path as described. Are there any members that would not be able to support that? And if so, we'd like to hear what your concern is. All right, so then that looks like everybody is going to be able to support that. So if you, all members, if you can hold up, well, except for Jennifer, you're not on camera. Hold up one, is full support. Agree without reservations. Two is agree with reservations. Three is stand aside. You're just kind of pulling yourself out, and four is do not agree. So we've got one. Riley's a one, Jill's a two. Okay, so we have consensus support, all ones and one two. And now if we could go to the co-chairs to convert that into the Roberts Rules format.
So I moved to...
Yep. Jill, can you share why you put up a two? What are your reasons?
Sure, just because it takes the reserve balance down really low, and it, for some reason, it makes me slightly nervous. That's all. It has nothing to do with the project. It has more to do with the fund balance.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you mind? Can I address that?
Yes.
Sure. Please. Thank you.
Yeah. So you know that $127,000, that represents, you know, our best guess at what will be, you know, what will be left after we build all the projects in the SSIP, I mean, that have been approved, and if, including if this one is approved, you know, within the first 7 years. There's still another 3 years of funding, and we've done our best to be conservative with the cost estimates for projects. So, you know, we're really trying to make sure that we're not overcommitting within that 7 year time horizon. If it turns out that we still have another 3 years of funding that'll be available. So, you know, it doesn't mean we'll run out of money. It means that, you know, the projects, based on collections, they might have to move a little bit slower, and it would leave less capacity at the, you know, at the back end in the last 3 years potentially.
Yeah, thank you for that explanation. And I mean, I recognize that the whole process is pretty conservative, but it's just my personality, I guess. So sure. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay. So that's recorded in the notes. And now why don't we move to approve this decision?
I move to approve the funding for the asphalt path on Country Club.
I second.
Okay, great. Congratulations, everyone, making a decision on this issue. Okay, the next up is major streets and routes update. Ben Alex.
Hey, everybody. Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
Good evening. My name's Ben Elias. I'm a project manager with the Department of Transportation and Mobility. I'm in the same team as Ryan and Patrick. I'm in planning and programming division. And I'm here to talk to you this evening about major streets and routes. So I understand that you all have gotten a little bit of an intro on this already. But I'm going to run through some stuff really quickly. If you need a little bit more or less, feel free to bring that and I'll kind of adjust as needed. So major streets and routes, it's actually a fairly old document now. It got started in 1982. It's a policy document that identifies our major streets throughout the city of Tucson, and it helps us guide what we see might be the future street improvements along those routes. It also ties transportation and land use together by establishing setbacks from the widths, the right-of-way widths that are established in the plan. So the idea is that with those widths, we're reserving that future right of way to make improvements on our streets without resorting to the demolition or wholesale acquisition of a corridor to hold on to that adjacent property and do something with the roadway. There's a corresponding map that goes along with that. There's an example on the left that you can see, and it calls out all of those and those different types of roads. So these are, we're really looking at arterial and collector streets. That's a very simplistic way to look at it. But each of these segments, road segments, calls out those future rights of way for updates to roads. And there's a value, a right of way width associated with each of those. The dramatically fast forward, something that you all might be very aware of, the street design guide was approved, and that's a document from 2021. This provides us updated design guidance on what we should be building and changing in our rights of way that's consistent with the complete streets policy. And the line I want to call out from the street design guide is this one below. Road widening should only be pursued in limited circumstances after all other options for improvements have been explored. And that has a really big implication for major streets and routes and the way it was originally conceived, because we need to dramatically shift those values that were established with the major streets and routes plan to plan for a future that doesn't take into account widenings on every corridor of an arterial or collector street across Tucson. As I mentioned, it has a land use impact. So major streets and routes, there are some standards that are applied to development along those arterial and collector corridors. So anything that's a new structure that's being built, something that already exists, but it's changing use from one use to another, or if there's a certain expansion in the floor area. All of those cases on the development review side would trigger the standards in the major streets and routes plan. So it's partially used for transportation planning, but also used for development review. And that's when we would be looking at those setbacks. So this is a kind of an illustration of what the major streets and routes setback zone might look like. So there's an area within that future right-of-way that we've established with a number where we would be prohibiting the construction of a structure, of a parking lot. And generally, we're just trying to keep that space clear because we don't want it to disturb any future plans for the use of that right-of-way. As I already touched on, why are we updating the major streets and routes plan in the first place? It's a pretty old document and it has been amended many times. But the last time the map was amended was back in 2016, prior to the complete streets policy and the street design guide and the major streets and routes policy document. The kind of plan part of it hasn't been amended since 1995. A lot has changed since then. We're continuing to plan with the region, PAGS, RMAP, or Regional Mobility and Accessibility Plan. That 2045 plan has already come out, and is actually we're continuing to plan with fewer road widenings, being more sensitive to future traffic volume projections to determine what our needs really will be. We adopted the complete streets policy, and also many projects that were called out in Move Tucson in 2021. We need to look at this policy with fresh eyes to adjust to changing needs into the future. The plan's been amended over 30 times already, but it can be updated to better reflect our investment priorities and our commitment to complete streets. We've already been given mayor and council direction
last year in October 2023 to return to Marin Council with a proposed update. So we're tracking on this timeline of working with our teams and then going back out to the public for feedback, for review prior to that final recommendation to Mayor and Council. So just a quick rundown of some of the things that we are looking at. On the right side of the screen, I have a snip from the street design guide. And this is calling out one of those street typologies. Sorry if it's hard to read, but I'll decode it for you. It's an urban connector, and it shows all the typical roadway characteristics that you might find. And instead of that like overarching arterial or collector, we're really honing on and what should this a street like this look like. So this is information we're pulling into and comparing to past major streets and routes. And it's things like the travel volumes, the number of lanes, the curb to curb width, what do the speeds look like, how frequent are the driveways popping up, what's the adjacent land use. There's a lot of this, and at the very bottom of those street typologies, there's also examples. So if you're having trouble understanding what that might look like, an example of an urban connector is Glen Street. But for our review, what we're looking at every individual street segment in the city that's classified as an arterial or collector currently. The example I'm pulling out for the first one is 29th Street between Alvernon and Craycroft. Given what Move Tucson has provided us, that document is proposing something like a right-of-way width like 64 feet. So this is a value that's less than the current major streets and routes width. But we do have a Move Tucson identified project to work with. Specifically, Move Tucson calls out a lane reduction project, installation of enhanced bike lanes, and some improvement to the landscaping. If there's a specific street type for each of these corridors that we're analyzing, we call it out. So that's an urban connector. We look at future congestion projections. There isn't any congestion predicted on this segment in 2045. The daily travel volumes are in the 10 to 15,000 vehicles a day, posted speed limit 35. The current width is 100 feet. So again, the recommended is 64. The current is 100 for that reserved right of way in the major streets and routes plan. We're also pulling real measurements of the existing half right of way. So we just kind of chop it in half and help to determine how we view that space. The curb to curb width is 68 feet. So it's already pretty wide. At the end of the day, we would be looking at something like two of the examples on the right of your screen, either given the Move Tucson recommendation of 64 feet, we could continue with that 64 feet of right of way, urban two lane, two way street with buffer protected bike lanes, or something maybe pretty similar in context, but a little bit wider. 76 feet. So that's a three lane. You would just have a two-way left turn lane in the middle, but still provide a lot of the same pedestrian realm amenities, bike amenities that meets the spirit of the identified project in Move Tucson. So looking at this, we might, on the conservative side, want to say we reserve 76 feet. So it's still a reduction in value from 100, but maybe it would allow us more flexibility in the future to keep 76 instead of bringing it down to 64. Another example might be Stone. The proposed Move Tucson project width is 90 feet. That's the current value that's shown in major streets and routes.
There is a move Tucson identified project on this corridor from River to Wetmore. And for the majority of this section of stone, it's actually classified as a suburban connector. It's also an urban connector in the portions that are closest to downtown. There's no congestion projected at that 2045 date. The travel volumes are a little bit higher than what our previous example was, 13,000 to 17,000, 35 miles an hour for the speed limit. The current value is 90 feet of right-of-way, curb to curb width 78. So we might just really be sticking with that recommended value of 90 feet on this corridor for that section. There's an example of what that can look like as a cross section up above. There are also a few other considerations that we're pulling into the mix, including that Stone Avenue and some other corridors across the city have some transit planning considerations in mind. So Stone has been called out as the locally preferred alternative for BRT, bus rapid transit, from Tohono O'odham to Kronstadt. So given that that cross section could still accommodate all of those modes of travel and some dedicated transit, we would stick with that value. This consideration is it's a zero value. So essentially, a zero value has more implications in a dense urban area like the downtown. If the corridor has really been built out to somewhat of a final configuration, either due to like a recent project being completed, like a corridor widening, it doesn't necessarily always make sense to keep that same value. We could mark it as a zero because by marking it as zero, it doesn't have the same implications on development. Those setbacks and the restrictions on the building frontage would not be treated the same way. I'm not going to bore you with some other stuff, but there are some code implications. But the bottom piece is a value. If a zero value is assigned, we do still want there to be a mechanism to make sure that any public improvements can be made. So essentially, we'd be looking at like the last 15 feet behind the curb. If a property is sold, which happens from our real estate division, if a property is sold adjacent to the roadway or a previous section of the roadway is sold off, that we maintain that 15 feet to allow for improvements like sidewalks and landscaping area. So really, really big picture, the map on the right is what we're looking at today. For all of our street segments, we've assigned new values, recommended values for each individual corridor. And the statuses are on the left. As you can see on the map, the vast majority of street segments in Tucson are generally going to be in two different areas. One, the green is a less than or a narrowing of the required right-of-way that we want to hold on to. Magenta is an equal to, or we're just maintaining the same values that had previously been in the major streets and routes plan. We're really not looking at widening like we had been before. That's not the intent. Looking at the major streets and routes plan going into the future. And then the blue segments are what we would call out as potential zero values. So again, that's going to be a lot of more dense corridors close to the downtown core or some segments that are really at final build out. There's been a recent RTA project or we have enough right of way to work with. We're pretty much there. Any improvements that are going to be made are going to be small, and we can work with the existing width
We would rather set the value at zero so it's less restrictive from a development point of view for setbacks and the like. Next steps, we've already created recommendations in-house, work with a working group to update these widths. We're moving this review forward with some external stakeholders, one of which is you all with the CSCC, also with some development stakeholders in partnership with Planning and Development Services. We plan to hold some public open houses, likely one virtual and one in person, prior to advancing this to the Planning Commission, and then eventually presenting our recommendations to Mayor and Council, ideally before, you know, February of next year. We're getting closer to that deadline to hear back at Mayor and Council. So that's what I have for you. If you do have any questions or concerns and aren't necessarily thinking of them in the moment, my email and phone number is there, so feel free to reach out. But I'm happy to take any questions if you all have them.
Thanks, Ben. We have Sophia.
Okay, I don't understand what right-of-way is, and I have two other questions that maybe can get me there. The first question is right-of-way to who, maybe can help me understand. And then the second question was the MSNR value, is it taking those factors and putting it into a formula, or is that a matrix that gets you that value?
It's a matrix of sorts, but it's just a very detailed spreadsheet that we've been working on to work through our recommendations. But also just to get back to your first question, right of way. We're talking about the public right of way or city right of way. This is essentially area that we are determining, we're setting aside for something, some street, some improvement that everybody can utilize and move along. And that width is really just calling out from property line to property line, from, Neto's house to Gina's house, at their fence line, everything between there is the public right of way. So again, this is calling out that value on arterials and collectors only, but the right of way, we also have right of way set aside for local streets. That width includes anything that we have the responsibility to shape and change. So that is the pedestrian realm, sidewalks, curb, asphalt, pavement markings, everything that would fall in there that would make up your street. That's what we're talking about. So we're just trying to provide. Go ahead, Sophia.
Yeah, I understand the width part. So when we look at lessening right of way, that width, then we're saying we're almost putting a limit on the width of a road, and we're allowing to for local business, for business or other property types, to then nestle up closer, so that we kind of, the idea is to maintain lane width or even suggest narrowing lanes.
Exactly. In almost all of these cases, we're looking at keeping those widths equal to the values that have already been there, or attempting to narrow those. It does give way for additional development and opportunity for folks to nestle up against that new right-of-way line. And generally what that looks like is we tend to see it in reverse. So if there was a big road widening project, let's say Grant Road, And when that project is being designed, we understand the road needs to be widened to a certain extent, and there needs to be setback from that road. Someone's house can't be right on the curb. So generally, a lot of those adjacent properties that are going to be dramatically impacted will be purchased. We have a real estate division, and they purchase those properties, which is incredibly disruptive and displacing. And that's something we want to move away from. But at the end of a project, when everything is, when the new roadway is complete, any property that is left over, and a road isn't, you know, in the middle of, those can be sold back off to anybody that wants to buy that land and do something with it. Again, we're trying to move away from that a little bit more. And if anything, it would allow for more real estate, more property to be opened up to be redeveloped.
Zach, then Ariel.
I have, well, one main question. If I understand correctly, when we narrow like the scope of like how much setback is required, then businesses, you know, have you know, there's more room for them to build up, which is and the roadway is narrowed, which I mean, I don't really have a judgment about, but is there is there any cost of or any decrease in opportunity to ensure that, you know, if sidewalks or other pedestrian walking lanes don't exist, is it difficult then to more difficult to create them because you have you know, less public right of way to work with?
I hear what you're saying. Yes is the answer. If there's a current condition where there is, let's say, no sidewalk present on the west side of a street, then redetermining that width could have an impact on that. And but for every single one of these segments, we're looking at, if there is a Move Tucson project on it, what is that ideal build out look like? What's that cross section look like? Again, for each of these, we're pulling a cross section out of the street design guide with all of those factors in play, because we want to make sure that any right of way that we still reserve, even if it's narrowed, can accommodate for all of those realms and all of those modes traveling along each street segment. So we're not forgetting about whether or not we can deliver sidewalk on that segment of street. The reality is that it might not be built yet. We still want to reserve the right of way for those improvements to be made, if we can allocate funding to do so.
Thanks, Ben. Ariel, did you have a question or not?
I actually have the same question as that, so I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. So we're going to have to move on. Thank you so much, Ben. Oh, Marshall, did you want one last question? Or
That's okay. I can ask. Am I allowed to email Ben later about it?
Okay.
It's not that important.
Sounds great. Thank you so much, Ben.
Thanks, all. Thanks for having me.
All right. So next up, we have Prop 411 Financial Update by Patrick.
Hey everyone, good evening. Nice to see you all. I got a brief presentation and we can talk a little bit about the finances and a little bit of progress report on what we're doing with the 411 safety program. So let me bring this up. Everybody see that all right and hear me okay?
Yep.
Cool. All right, so kind of as we transition as the CSCC away from that planning programming responsibility as it relates to Proposition 411, we're now looking to set up a kind of standing process by which we start to review the expenditures and the project delivery, program delivery portion of it. And tonight's our first attempt to actually formally agendize then the expenditures to date, starting to track revenues and really seeing taking a look at the financial health of the overall program as it relates to some of the projects we begin to deliver. So if some of you recall, kind of as a companion to the passage of Proposition 411, Mayor and Council approved something called the Truth in Taxation Ordinance, or Ordinance Number 11914, which specified the responsibilities of the Complete Streets Coordinating Council, as well as the Independent Oversight and Advisory Committee, as they relate to the oversight and kind of execution of Proposition 411. They specified four responsibilities of the CSCC regards to the 20% safety set-aside program. And those are to develop and establish a street safety improvement plan, which we've come to call the SSIP. In August, we were able to finally approve that seven-year program, looking out to committing dollars to the next 5 years, or out until 2029, of Proposition 411 safety program. So now we're kind of moving into items two and three, which is to monitor progress on the SSIP and to make sure we are meeting our commitments, and to ensure that the purposes for which Proposition 411 was approved are carried out, and that Proposition 411 safety plans are separated and accounted for, really providing that kind of that transparency and citizens' oversight on the delivery of the program. Item four, hopefully we doesn't come to item four being called, but basically item four, the fourth responsibility, is for whatever reason, in case there is the need to change the allocation of funding. If you recall, it's 80% for pavement, 20% for safety, with the subdivision across sidewalks, bikeways, traffic signals, and safety category. That matter will be referred to the CSCC for a recommendation to council. As of right now, we do not anticipate a change to that allocation, but I just wanted to flag that for you, make you aware that that is one of the specified responsibilities of this commission. But tonight, we're really focusing on items two and three, now that we've completed item one. So in terms of the financial health and revenue of the program, this is where we stand as of August 31st, 2024. This is the overall revenue collection picture of all of Proposition 411, which includes both the local streets paving work as well as the Safe Streets 20% set aside portion. So as of August 31st, we currently have collected about $33 million in Safe Streets revenue. As of August 31st, and we are liable for some additional costs, and we've also accrued some additional costs since that time. But as of that printing, we've spent about $5.4 million in the Safe Streets program. So we are building up quite an impressive war chest right now in terms of cash flow revenue, the money we're sitting on to be able to execute these projects. We can go a little bit more into detail into each of the various areas. So if you recall, the first one that was identified as a set aside of that 20% was for sidewalk and pedestrian accessibility improvements. And that is anticipated to be about $4.5 million per year that we'll be collecting based on that percentage. To date, we've expended about $1 million in that category. I'm happy to announce that the Greasewood sidewalk project is fully complete and closed out. So that was the first sidewalk project that had been fully installed and completed as a function of that. One that's not showing up here, but has also accrued some costs that we just need to break out from the collector program, as we've spent the $225,000 that was previously approved on Old Spanish Trail. That project has also been completed. That was a refresh of the shared use path, or the side path, on Old Spanish Trail. And the other two projects are those which are accruing design costs. So those are not construction costs, but we are approaching 60% design on the Bilby Road project. We've brought that back to the CSCC a couple of times, and we sought reauthorization or expansion of funding to increase the scope on that. That was last December. So we are actually planning a public meeting next week on Bilby Road for 60%. And then the Limberlost Complete Streets project is also under active design. With regard to the bicycle network improvements, we've expended about $556,000. Our anticipated annual revenue is about $3 million on this category. We have completed the Aviation Greenway resurfacing project that was approved in that year one package by the CSCC. So that is one that has been wrapped up and closed out. We are in active design on Ontario and Mesador bike boulevards. That was an add-on to a bike boulevard package on the west side that we were able to scab on that project as approved by the CSCC in that year one. Or no, that was actually approved as a one-off project because we were able to deliver it as part of a package. So it had some efficiencies. And then the Stone Avenue cycle track, which is actually under active construction right now, and the first section of which should be open in the next not too distant future. We're looking to wrap that all up this fall. So if you're in downtown or on Stone Avenue, you'll see that that one is actively being worked on and getting ready for opening. So pretty exciting. You'll see Limberlost showing up here again on this category, and this is a function of our layering projects and that we're using funds from the different categories to deliver more complete project. So Limberlost is, or Bilby, you're tapping into funds from multiple categories. And then if we look at our safety improvement projects, and these are that general safety category, you can see a number of these. So we installed a solar light at the intersection of 16th and Star, which is that transition onto Aviation Bikeway. It was that transition was very dark and it was posing a safety hazard. So we actually installed a safety light or a solar light at that location. So we didn't have to hardwire into the grid, which was pretty exciting. So we're continuing to monitor to see how that performs. Those solar lights can be a little bit unreliable. So we're testing them in kind of lower stakes locations. You can see there's safety money on Bilby Road, again, as a function of that layering process, the way we're approaching the finances of this and layering the projects in. Congress Street in Grande is under active design. We're continuing to proceed with that, so nothing done. Golf Links in Pantano has been completed and closed out. So if you're out in that area, you can see a lot of the improvements that have happened at Golf Links and Pantano. At future meetings, I would like to bring some images in, some pictures to see some of before and afters and kind of what those projects are doing. But for tonight's purposes, it's really that financial picture. And then a lot of this is primarily design. We haven't gotten a lot of these projects out the door yet, but we are active on them. One I'll call it is Silver Bell. That should be wrapped up. You all approved that funding this summer. That should be wrapped up in the next couple of weeks. And we're actually, Ryan's talking about maybe doing a field trip there to go see what the progress was and how we were able to take advantage of existing work to layer in some safety improvements. I can assure you it was more than $7,000, but that's all that has hit our books thus far. Oracle Road in Alturas is a new hawk that is aligning with the senior housing Milagro that's been developed on Oracle. So that will be installed shortly. And a couple of these are also the neighborhood safety projects, which we'll hear more about. Anyway, $1.5 million has been expended in this category to date. Most of that is that Golf Links and Pantano actual construction. And then finally, our traffic signal upgrades. This is a long list, and these are ones that we are going to get more information on, hopefully at the next meeting. May not be as visible to the traveling public, but are making a major impact on mobility and safety. And these are areas where we're upgrading to flashing yellow arrows, getting our communications equipment in place, better detection. So we're at about $2.37 million. We may have expended, as of tonight, about $2.9 million. The CSCC has only authorized that 1 year of funding in this category. We're going to bring it second separately and look at the full 7 year authorization. So we're hoping.
Did Patrick suddenly sign out?
Uh-oh.
Yeah, for me as well.
Huh, wonder what happened.
Well,
and see if he tries to come back.
Yeah, see if he tries to come back. We are right at time, moving on to our next topic. Let's just go on to Andrea and then we can come back to Patrick. Neighborhood mini grant update. Sorry, guys. That was unexpected. Go, you can go ahead.
Okay, can you hear me all okay?
Yes.
Oh, perfect. Well, hello, good evening, everyone. My name is Andrea Altamirano, and I'm a transportation program coordinator for the Department of Transportation and Mobility. And I am fortunate to take on Gabriela Barria Longoria's role, if you remember her from the last couple rounds or when this project initiated. She was fortunate to step into a role as chief of staff for the Ward 1 council office. And so in April of this year, I stepped into this role to help with the Safe Streets mini grant program. So I just wanted to take a minute to introduce myself and say hello so that you can put a picture of the name. And I wanted just to do a few things. A quick introduction is give you a brief update on where we are with some of the with the projects that you approved last year, or actually I think this year. And I also wanted to kind of peruse a little bit through the website to give you information to share with residents and other people that you feel might be interested in applying for the grant this year. I'll just give you a quick background about myself. I, at the beginning of the year, I retired from Pima County after 30 years of employment. And in that capacity, in one of my roles, I was very fortunate to work for the late Supervisor Richard Elias in District 5, Pima County Board of Supervisors office. And in that capacity, I served as a constituent liaison and worked with various transportation and park improvement projects. So when this opportunity came up, I was really happy to fill in this role because it's very relatable. I like working with community and getting projects completed. So thank you for you know, your work and the work that Gabriela did. I'm really looking forward to stepping into the role and continuing the fabulous work that you did. And thank you for serving on this committee. I've served on committees before. It's late at night, so I'll try to be brief and quick. If I can, do I have the ability to share the screen?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, very good. So I'm going to take you to the Safe Streets mini grant website. Have any of you seen it before? I imagine you have when you worked with Gabriela. Show of hands. No? Yes? Okay, cool. So there's been a few updates that we've done, and I want to ask you if you see something on there that you feel it's like not user-friendly, or you're just having a hard time finding the application, anything that you feel can be easier for residents to find, please feel free to send me an email and let me know. We're trying to do updates and, you know, this is like a pilot year and trying to get this all into place. So I just wanted to say that as well. So let me share screen. Okay, can you all see the screen now?
No.
No?
So wow. Maybe pick what you want to share and then you have to click share.
Yeah, I did. Let's see. Oh, no, I didn't. Okay, you're right. Share right there.
Yeah.
Okay, now you can see it, right?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. So, in... let me just make sure I have this up. Okay. So this is the website. It just very quickly talks about what the program is. Talks about the safe you about you all the Complete Streets Coordinating Council, and how to bring traffic calming to your block. So it describes the process. It's really three easy steps to apply. It says who can apply, right? So it can be neighborhood groups, community-based organizations, and businesses. We have the applications available either online or a paper application. This link here takes you to my email. If people can't print, don't have a printer or something, they're welcome to contact me. But it's a fairly easy application that was designed. It also talks about just gaining that neighborhood collaboration and other residents involved for the application process. So we have one lead applicant who is the main point of contact, and then we ask that they have at least 3 to 5 neighborhood, what we call champions, for the application. It also describes a little bit about the evaluation and how we determine who can, you know, who meets the evaluation is it has to be city owned property, have a maximum of 2 travel lanes, and residential or a local street, so like a neighborhood street, right? No collector or arterial streets are allowed. And then this awesome map, you can enter your information to kind of determine, is my street a collector street or not? So we have that available there. We also have information on how the applications will be scored. As you can see, equity is at 35%. Safety and road design is at 20%. So it gives us a good idea of the percentages of how these projects are rated or scored. In addition, we have a quick summary about the application review process. And to follow, there's some things to keep in mind because the project is a little bit tedious to get to, right? When if residents are interested in speed humps, we like to just kind of give them a heads up that the length of time that it's going to take to get these projects implemented if they get selected. And also they have to go through the Neighborhood Transportation Management Program, which is collecting petitions from other residents in approval of their traffic calming features that they selected on their application. So it just gives them a highlight. I'm planning to put this on a, you know, so that it cascades so that you can kind of hide some of this information because it's very long. But the website also provides an idea of what traffic calming is. So there are things like speed humps, and it gives a description, chicanes, traffic circles. And we also have a menu of options that you can look at. Which gives you more information or a description about the traffic mitigation and then associated cost. So for this past year, the maximum that residents would have is $75,000. But we really don't want to concentrate on the cost as far as how much everything we, you know, what they can apply for. It's really, where are the areas that are that you need assistance in, that they're speeding, and what do you think would go well there? Is it, do you think you would need speed humps, or are you totally against speed humps? So it really kind of describes that procedure and what that is, or not procedure, but what the traffic calming is. Why traffic calming? And then we talk about what's happening and when. So we do have a deadline. We're accepting applications right now for the next round, which would be announced in the spring of 2025. And the deadline for 2025 is this year at the end of the year, the last day of the year, which is a Tuesday, December 31st. So we're making people aware that there is a deadline and we are taking applications right now. We also have a note that if applications were not selected in the previous year, their application will be left in queue and the score that they received will remain, and we'll consider that with the new applications. But we also did encourage applicants who did not receive funding to reapply to strengthen their application, and we did indicate where they could strengthen. Which is in those areas like community involvement. This is a list of upcoming events that we've been sharing. We might change this a little bit, but these are some of the events where I've been doing, or our staff in general has been doing outreach. But this is the fun part that I really wanted to explain and just kind of give you a brief glimpse. These are all the projects that you approved. And they're all move-in really well, successfully. You had 10 projects that you were approved, and at least five have been completed, and you can see they're highlighted under status. And then there's three that are being implemented in October. So they're pretty much, we're just acquiring the contractor. One of them is on a school zone, so, or in a school zone area. So we're waiting until school's over or that they're on a break. So everything's working out pretty well so far, knock on wood. And then there's just two of them that are pending right now. But the rest of them have been moving pretty well. But if you want to take a look, maybe even explain to community residents, these are the types of things that have been approved. You can see that the details of the information that was completed and in what neighborhoods. This is something that we're working on. We're going to have pictures of the neighborhoods who have completed the projects. We have one. It's kind of difficult to upload these in here, but we're trying to get better, crisper pictures. This is one of them in Vida neighborhood. But that's our plan, is to continue to take pictures with, they might not be with the residents. That's the difficult part, is getting people in there for the photos. Frequently asked questions are here. And then we do have my contact information and other resources to apply. I'm going to stop sharing my screen and just say another quick tidbit. Some of the outreach that we're doing, and I'd like to invite you to attend if you're interested. So far to date, we have 10 applications in queue, new applications, and I anticipate receiving many more, especially after we do some of these events that are scheduled. The one that's upcoming is on October 5th, and I can upload the information in the chat or send it if you'd like, Connie. But this one, I think, is probably going to encourage more people to apply for. It's the Connecting Neighborhoods with City Services. It's a special event that the city is hosting, and that'll be at the Hallstein Learning Center from 9:30 to 11. They're starting with opening remarks by the mayor, Mayor Romero, and it's from 9:30 to 11. So we plan to have a table, and I'll have flyers and information. It's an interactive table that will highlight some of the projects that we've done and ask about the deadlines to make sure people know about that. So I imagine that'll bring a lot of people in. This is intended for councils, commissions, committees like yourself, and also for neighborhood association groups, or not necessarily the groups, but the leaders within the neighborhood associations. And then the other event that I wanted to mention before I close is a fun event. It's through, for me, it's fun. It's a fuga, I'm sure for a lot of people too. I'm not sure if you've heard of fuga. I forget what it stands for. Let me see.
Families United Gaining Accessibility.
Yes. Thank you, Sophia. I appreciate that. Yes. So we're leading the Southside bike ride, Bicicleteada del Sur, on October 25th from 6 to 8:30 at El Pueblo Neighborhood Center. And that's located at 101 West Irvington. So we'll be showcasing some of the traffic mitigation that the city has installed in neighborhoods. And I like riding my bike, so it'll be another fun event. We did this at the beginning of the month this month. On the west side, so we'll be joining the south side bike ride, just to highlight and showcase just what the city has done, what are hawk lights, you know, some people, we don't know the technical name, speed humps, just to give an idea and to make it a fun ride. So I wanted to invite you to that as well. And I'm sure I'll be giving you more information as soon as we start scoring and reviewing all the new applications that we receive. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Andrea. So there is a comment. You don't need to read it, Sophia, but if you look in the chat, it's a very specific suggestion about the website. Are there other questions or comments? Thank you so much. Why don't you, if you can just put in the chat the web link, and maybe you can just put the date again for the event that you were referring to.
Perfect. I'll definitely.
And then Colleen will get it in the notes, but in the before people actually get the notes, it'd be nice to have. Patrick, are you back?
I'm back.
Okay.
Better or worse, I am here.
All right. Thank you, Andrea. Patrick, do you want to finish up? We are over time, so.
I will be very brief. I apologize for that. Everyone had an unexpected critical failure.
Of the computer.
Of the computer. And maybe as in other areas of my life, but we'll leave that aside. We'll take this as a nonlinear presentation. All right, so I just wanted to wrap up a couple things and look a little bit at how we are comparing or tracking against the forecasted revenue for what we built the SSIP on versus the actuals of what are coming in. So if we look at FY23, which is from June to July of last year, we collected about $14.5 million. And if you recall that we built the SSIP on an anticipated revenue model of about $15 million in 2023 value projected out 10 years. However, this doesn't mean that we are coming in below our expected revenue. The challenge with that first year of collections is that it takes a little while for the additional sales tax to go through the Department of Revenue and actually get collected to the appropriate pot. So there's probably a 1 to 2 month lag on the collections that are on FY23, and we will actually see those on the back end of the 10-year program. So we're still actually running ahead of anticipated revenue, $14.5 million, really under probably 10 and a half, 11 months of collection. FY24 really provides a better picture of the collections in terms of where we are versus our forecast. And last year, ending on June 30th, we collected $16.5 million for the safety program. So we're about a million and a half above what we built the plan on. And then we continue unabated into 25. Year to date, we've collected about $3 million in the safety program. So as a function of kind of some of our conservative cost estimating and conservative revenue estimating, we're looking pretty good from a financial perspective. Tying that back to our projections for the 7-year plan, this is where we are in terms of that 7-year funding commitment. As you recall, we were at $627,000 in funding availability under that sidewalk category. And I want to note that this is tracking against updated engineering estimate or actual expenses. So we're going to be tracking that on an ongoing basis to make sure that we aren't exceeding our revenue or aren't exceeding our anticipated revenue, even with that growth. So we have about $120,000 in capacity on that sidewalk built on that $15 million a year estimate. We still have about $3.4 million in capacity in the bikeway category unprogrammed out 7 years. And we're actually negative $133,000 right now on the safety program. And this is a function of that Pantano Parkway cost coming in above what the engineer's estimate was when we actually got the construction costs. Not too concerned about that. Again, we're coming in a little higher on the revenue side. So I think that's something that can be accommodated, not terribly concerning. And then we still have that remaining $14, $12, and $13 million budgetary capacity based on that $15 million forecast. So with that, our recommendation right now would be to continue to monitor this, see where the actual costs are coming in, and probably on a 2-year basis, reevaluate the SSIP to see if there's additional funding, if the costs are coming in competitively or below what we had budgeted for, and if our revenues continue to come in high, we can look to open up that additional budgetary capacity. But I wouldn't encourage, although we will, you know, it is the pleasure of the committee, wouldn't encourage really pursuing a lot of additional projects immediately until we get a better handle on what kind of that another year of revenue collections and we start to actually get projects in the ground and get a sense of the construction costs. So that's kind of the state of 411 as it stands right now. And with that, I can take any questions. And I would also entertain any recommendations for would be a better way of presenting this information if there's anything specifically you'd like to hear at future updates, as well as the frequency of those updates.
Okay, thoughts about those three questions or Patrick's presentation? Marshall.
No, I just didn't, I overall enjoyed the presentation. It's really interesting to see the money being collected. I did have a question. I was just a clarifying question. What's the fiscal year for those slides?
It is June to, so July 1 to June 30th is our fiscal year.
Okay, thank you.
So the 23 fiscal year would start in June of 22 and conclude in July of 23. The 24 would start in 23 and end in 24.
Okay.
So we're now in fiscal 25 currently. Good question.
Jennifer?
Hi, I just had a question. I know that the last meeting we saw, we looked at the country club, but also we looked at the Tucson Boulevard sidewalks. So should money become available for the Tucson Boulevard sidewalks, we could consider that within maybe the next 2 years. That's what I understood, maybe.
Yeah, potentially. I think it's something we can keep our eyes on. And if some of our costs, there's one we've got our eyes on in particular that we budgeted pretty conservatively for the Ajo sidewalk project that might be coming in low. If when that construction is wrapped up, we have additional capacity, I think we can reevaluate to see if we want to pursue additional sidewalk projects. Otherwise, I would recommend holding out for the 2 years. But again, it's at the pleasure of the committee on how and when that funding is used.
Okay, we need to move on. Thank you, Patrick. If you have follow-up questions, you can email them to Patrick.
Ryan, you'll be sending out just the paper version of the financial report, correct?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. So upcoming agenda topics, specifically, Sophia was suggesting public transit and suggested having a very brief, we'll say 5 minutes, what would you all like to learn more about related to transit so that the agenda committee, subcommittee, the co-chairs and us can figure out how to integrate that into upcoming meetings? What would you like to learn about related to transit? Jill.
Hi, could you briefly talk a little bit about what y'all already talked about?
So, thank you. Yeah, this item popped up because Riley had mentioned a transit task update and carving out some more space for it. And for me, I want to understand Complete Streets more. And I want to understand how the Complete Streets Guide incorporates a focus on transit and how we can be thinking about transit when we're making decisions.
Okay, thank you.
Other thoughts?
It's Jennifer. I can't get my hand up here, sorry.
That's right.
I've had this conversation with Patrick before, but the whole idea of operating on a grid versus the old-fashioned way going through those old, what I want to call gerrymandered routes, the fact that we're still experiencing institutional racism on the south side with some of the SunTran routes. I'd like to talk about that.
Okay, good. Marshall?
Yeah, it's just maybe we can find out, is it possible to use any of the Safe Street money to build any additional bus pullouts around the city?
Ryan, do you want to answer that?
Yeah, Patrick may be a better person to answer this. I don't believe that that would qualify. We can do things like add ADA compliant bus pads at bus stops, but other types of transit improvements, I don't believe that those qualify. But Patrick, please feel free to correct me.
Yeah, we'd have to take a look into that just to make sure there is a definite safety benefit from a bus pullout. And I think if we verify that, then one could make an argument that it would be qualify under the 411 kind of safety, the safety spot improvements or the safety category.
And Monica, you want to answer this?
Yes, I just wanted to point out that the Suntran team is currently not actively supporting bus pullouts because cars will not let the bus drivers come back into traffic. So they are trying to get better facilities on the lane itself rather than getting the bus on the pullout and then having to come back, which slows the whole line down.
Interesting. Okay. Other comments, other suggestions for transit topics?
Yeah. And then I would just add like an understanding around how pedestrians access transit. I think we've all seen that person run to try to catch the bus and, you know, like running through a red light or crossing the street in the middle without a light. So yeah, it's really nebulous, and getting some concrete will be good.
Zach?
Yeah, I think like, I don't know if this is actually possible, but I know there's like a new director of public transit or some, I'm forgetting the exact title, but like, who came on in either late July or early August. So maybe getting some feedback, at least from him, as to, you know, any new areas of service or new focuses that impact Complete Street.
Okay, excellent. And then maybe also following up with Riley about what he would suggest. And it could even be, and we're rolling into the CSCC hub, that there's even posing this question to the Tucson Transit Advisory Committee and what they think would be useful for the broader CSCC to be able to discuss or provide feedback on versus just the 2-minute update. Okay, let's just continue on with the hub. The IOAC, Jim?
Good evening. I just wanted to let you all know that the IOAC last met on the 26th of August. They meet again next on the 28th of October. Aside from the normal reports on status, the big conversation really had to do with the interactions between DTM and Tucson Water. We have a lot of water projects we have old water lines under old roads, and how we work together on that has been a bit of a challenge, particularly when Tucson Water has either a need for a project that they don't currently have funded, or if they have vulnerable facilities that by simply the virtue of our work, we have the potential to disturb and rupture. So those are things we're working on.
Thanks, Jim. Park Tucson, Jill.
Hi there. So we met yesterday, and Park Tucson has communicated with all the neighborhoods that participate in the residential parking program, the kind of new rules around that. It will be revisited in 1 year, and 2 neighborhoods have already claimed all the money that's set aside for this year. And the next thing Park Tucson is doing is reaching out to the business districts along the streetcar about extending meter hours. Right now it's Monday through Friday from 8 to 5, and they're going to propose that it changes to Monday through Saturday from 8 to 8. But 5 p.m. after, there won't be time limits. And they're still trying to staff up for enforcement. Some of the folks on the committee were kind of wondering why expand things when there's not enough enforcement to enforce right now. But they're confident that they will be able to staff up enforcement. And that's about that. Does anybody have any questions? Our next meeting is October 22nd. I can take any questions or... All right. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Jill. Riley's not here for the Transit Advisory Committee, unless any of you happen to be at a meeting if they had one. Bicycle Advisory Committee, James is not here.
Yeah, and BIC didn't make quorum this month.
Okay. And last, Commission on Disability Issues, Zach.
Yes, thank you. At our last meeting, which was last week, we met with Assistant City Manager Morales and a code enforcement liaison and talked about how code enforcement goes about dealing with property owners who have sidewalk abutting their property and may be damaged or in disrepair. The city had a program that is currently on pause right now to help fund those repairs. It was so popular that they have a couple hundred projects in their backlog right now. When that program comes back, it'll be more targeted to low-income property owners, as that was not the case in its last form. You know, for us as disabled folks, that was really interesting because oftentimes inaccessible sidewalks restrict our ability to move about the city. And the city, the reason it has so many backlog is it only really has about 6 workers who work on those types of projects, among other things that they do on a yearly basis or on a weekly basis. So, any questions? I'm happy to answer.
Any questions for Zach? All right. Thank you so much. Okay. Our personal complete streets experiential opportunity for the month. The next one is assignment. Visit a small business and notice the street infrastructure around it. Streetery, buffer between road and walkway, etc. Extra credit if you get there, not in a car. Any comments by our co-chairs on this one? It's kind of self-explanatory, but Sophia, you want to say anything?
I believe this was already assigned.
Was this, did people do it? Raise your hand if you did this. Marshall, Jill, Sophia, Ariel?
And then Zach raised his hand.
And Zach. Okay. Anything you want to share about it in 2 minutes? All right, we're going to discuss this in the agenda next agenda meeting so that because we keep kind of not having enough time for this item. So we'll talk about how we can integrate time to actually share back about what you all experienced too. Okay, the last topic is DTM update. And then wrap up. Ryan, Patrick, Jim.
I'll just mention a couple things. There were some striping and other improvements made at the intersection of Helen and Mountain to address kind of some persistent safety and comfort concerns at that location. That's the first project that we've completed under the $100 funding permission program that we have. So we'll give an update, further update on that in the future, but go ahead and check that out. Patrick has been through there a number of times and says that, you know, people are behaving a lot better. Drivers on Mountain seem to be kind of treating it more like a yield or a stop, with the changes, which seems to be improving, the situation for folks who are trying to walk across and otherwise get through the intersection. And then Patrick mentioned it briefly, but Silver Bell is nearing completion with the improvements that were approved, earlier this year. So, in the coming weeks, the protected bike lane, the curb and bollards will be installed. The RRFB will be turned on. Other than that, the improvements out there are largely completed. There's also going to be a little fine tuning on the striping that we're going to be doing. Patrick or Jim, do you have anything else?
Yeah, I can just give you some really brief numbers. First of all, we're now 17 months since the first of the Prop 411 neighborhood streets projects started. We now have 15.5% of our total street inventory now treated. We have another 6% under contract. We've collected to date on the Better Streets side of the house $131+ million, and we have under contract $108 million worth of projects.
Great. Patrick, anything from you?
Yeah, just very briefly, I've mentioned that the First Avenue project is now open and public. We have an open survey, so I would encourage people to take that. We'll be having our first public open house on October 9th, as well as putting together a number of pop-ups through the fall to get feedback on the First Avenue project, one that you guys have been pretty involved in over the years. So we're excited to finally be getting that into design. We also have a Bilby open house on October 1st at Sunnyside High School. So that will be coming up for the 60% submittal. And then broadly across the department, we're wrapping up the Stone Avenue protected bike lane. The next batch of bike boulevards has just gone to bid. We'll be starting construction 9th, 9th, 5th, kind of connecting through downtown to the Pima Community College downtown campus. The Roger Road walkability project will be starting construction imminently. So that's an exciting one to get going. And obviously, Grant 3 and 4 is under active construction. And we are about to sign 22nd Street East is under active design. We're about to sign IGAs on the Valencia Road I-19 to Elvernon Safety Improvements Project, as well as the new bridge on Harrison. So those will be kicking off for design probably early next year. And probably 2 years out from 2 to 3 years out from construction.
All kinds of things going on. Anyone else want to announce any upcoming events related to Complete Streets? Any other events? Okay. And any other agenda item requests? A reminder that at least it's in the agenda I'm looking at. We have the upcoming agenda topics running list. Thanks for posting that, Patrick. And you don't have to review the list, or you can. But if there's any specific items you think the agenda team should take a look at. Okay. Well, that we covered a lot tonight. Thank you all. Any final comments from anyone? Okay. Did you, Andrea?
I just wanted to mention that I think I uploaded it. Okay. The flyers that we use for now for the Safe Streets mini grant applications to share with residents in Spanish and in English. I uploaded it to the chat. Hopefully you can access it.
Yeah, so people take a look at the chat if you want to download any of that, and then it'll also appear in the notes. And I think just a reminder. So thank you all. And Coach Harris, if you want to move to adjourn the meeting.
I move to adjourn the meeting.
I second.
All right. Have a nice month, everyone.
Have a good one. Bye.
Take care, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye, Colleen. Did you turn off the record?
I think. Sorry, I can't.